Welcome to the steps 10 to 12, this new house workshop of NCNA 31. My name is Ed, and I'm an addict. Hello, everybody. Will you please open this meeting with a moment of silence followed by a serenity prayer? God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. Lewis has been asked to read, what is the Narcotics Anonymous program? Thanks, Lewis. And Amy's been asked to read, why are we here?
Good evening. My name is Amy, and I'm a recovering addict. Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed our use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, our husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods were sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized that we were sick people. We suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is impossible.
Thanks, Amy. And Tanya has been asked to read how it works.
Hi, I'm Tanya. I'm an addict, and I'm clean today. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There is one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. We feel that our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic. For the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society, in everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you are like us, you know that one is too many and 1,000 never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya. This time I'd like to introduce our speaker, Bella B. from Australia.
Hello, my name's Bella. I'm an addict and I'm clean tonight. And I've got to say that I didn't know whether this was going to work tonight. I lost my voice a couple of days ago. I'm hoping it will last. But look, before I start, I've been thinking a lot about the people down in Louisiana and down that part of the world, and I'd like you to join me in a moment's prayer for them. They must be having a really hard time. Thanks. One of the best things I think about not knowing whether I was going to have a voice or not tonight was it stopped me from thinking about what I was going to speak about. I was too busy kind of writing notes to people to try and save my voice, and a lot of people at the convention now think I actually can't speak at all. I'm not going to share about that tonight, but I mean, it's been a whole different experience being at a convention where people really don't think that I can speak. And I just realised how much we need to talk to each other, because most people, when they realised I couldn't talk, didn't know what to do with me. So I don't know what it must be like for people to come to the fellowship who can't speak. And it's given me a really interesting insight into the way that we relate to each other. But I guess, and I've used this drug a couple of times already, I find out another sort of way, you know, I'm just a really dumb blonde, you know. That's what I've been the last couple of days. But I'm not stupid. And one of the things that at least I decided to do before I did, when I realised I could actually speak tonight, was I looked at the basic text to have a little look at steps 10, 11 and 12. And the paragraph that left out to me is one out of step 10. And it says, we are creatures of habit and are vulnerable to our old ways of thinking and reacting. At times it seems easier to continue in the old rut of self-destruction than to attempt a new and seemingly dangerous route. We don't have to be trapped by our old patterns. Today we have a choice. And I'm somebody who's been trapped by my own old patterns of self-destruction my whole life. One of the things that I'm incredibly aware of, and I have since I got clean, is how angry and how sad I've been my whole life. There have been times when my anger has been the most obvious thing. And as a child, I was angry the whole time. My dreams were of ripping people limb from limb, and I knew that that was wrong, and I didn't share that with anybody. And I felt really sad, but I didn't talk about that either. In my family, there was a whole undercurrent of sadness that we never talked about. On the outside, everything looked fine, but for a lot of my childhood, my father had a mental illness, and we never talked about that. But we were terrorized by him at home. And it was like none of us were allowed to be sad, because then maybe we would all start to cry. And we gave sadness a lot of really horrible names. If you were sad, it meant you were sulky. If you were sad, it meant you were ungrateful. If you were sad, it meant you were a bad girl. And there's a particular Australian word called whinging. That if you were sad, you were whinging, you know. And there was a lot to be sad about, but we could never, ever talk about it. And so anger somehow seemed to shore me up when my sadness threatened to just break me into tiny pieces. But it was a really bad thing to be angry. It was a really wrong thing to be angry. And it was nothing that I could ever express. So I just carried it with me, and I seethed, and I hated, and I was resentful. And I thought I was angry with you, and I thought I was angry with God, and I thought I was angry with the whole world. But in fact, forget my father, and forget the mental illness. That was just another kind of thing. What I hated most was my inability to live to my own potential. And I know this sounds like a big thing, but even as a kid, people used to say to me all the time, you could be anything you wanted. I mean, I was told that from being when I was really little, because I was smart and I could read before I went to school, and I could sing and I could play the piano. I was a musician and I was a comic, and there was a whole lot of things. And people said to me, you could be anything you liked. But I knew that I couldn't, because my personality just couldn't take me there. There was a whole lot of things about me that that teachers knew about and wrote in my report card, but that I knew about and I was really embarrassed about. I couldn't concentrate on things. I couldn't. With the best will in the world, I couldn't concentrate on things. If something was easy, I did it. And if something took it was a little bit hard, I just couldn't do it. And I would see people who could kind of stick with things, you know, and who could learn things and who didn't mind being a learner. And I just couldn't do that. I just couldn't concentrate on things. I was really, really easily distracted. And that kind of stuff was complained about by everybody. My school teachers, my Sunday school teachers, my parents. And I was really embarrassed about it, but I couldn't do anything about it. Couldn't do anything about it at all. I was really frightened all the time. I never talked about that either. I needed to be kind of a big, strong, brave girl, but I was really frightened all the time. And I knew that. I didn't know what the word was, but it meant that I couldn't really take any risks. You know, I could look like I was taking risks, but I never took any risks at all. And I just kept doing the same things over and over that I was good at, and I avoided anything that would have challenged me. And I couldn't do anything I didn't want to do. Now, this might sound absurd, and I don't know what non-addicts would make of this, but if I didn't really want to do something, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. If I was given homework, for instance, and I didn't want to do it, nothing could make me do it. You know, I couldn't sit, I couldn't focus, I couldn't follow it through, I just couldn't do it. And I really wish that I could, and I sort of, what I did with my anger, I would just say, oh, well, that's for dumb idiots. You know, that's for idiots, that's for boring people to sit down and work on stuff. But I knew that there was something wrong with me. I really couldn't endure. I was good at doing things fast, but I couldn't do anything slowly. Even things like my reading, like I was a reader, but I was an addictive reader. So I would read a book in an afternoon. I couldn't remember anything about it the next day. Nothing. You know, and I was really embarrassed about that too. So even these things that people said were really good just felt really bad to me. And when people said that I could do anything I liked, all I could see was just a whole lot of things that someone said I could do that I knew I was never going to be able to do. I knew that I was never going to be able to do any of that kind of stuff, and I felt really, really depressed about it, and I felt really, really angry about it, and I was really, really angry with me. Really, really, really angry with me. And I blamed everything. But essentially, I couldn't do what I wanted to do because of something with the way that I thought, and my feelings got in the way all the time. And when I was adolescent, I found drugs, And finally, I had an excuse for why things weren't going to work out for me. You know, I used drug addiction as an incredible excuse for not doing all the things that I could do. I mean, people who hear me share at home all the time know I say this all the time. I was better when I was running a really big drug habit, because then there was no choices in my life. I could blame everything that happened to me on my drug habit. I wasn't that didn't seem obvious, and I didn't tell you that. But if I wasn't running a big heroin habit, then I'd be writing that book. You know, and if I hadn't been writing and running that really big heroin habit, then I would have taken up all those opportunities that were offered to me in my 20s that I never took up. I mean, I was given opportunities to go to university. I dropped out because I was using. You know, I was given opportunities to sing in bands, but no one could bear me because I was using. You know, I was given opportunities to act, and no one, but I couldn't be part of an ensemble because I was too busy using. And the using just sort of very conveniently got in the way of me ever being able to reach my full potential. Now, you might think, what's this got to do with the 10th step? But I'm trying to get there. So what happened, I was a person who thwarted herself. I thwarted everything. I sabotaged everything, absolutely everything, because I knew that I wasn't going to be able to do it. So I might as well stuff it up early, you know, and so that I don't have any kind of heartbreak. But I had no idea that I was doing this, by the way. And the way that I got away with this was also incredibly busy. I mean, one good thing about being absolutely intolerably busy is that there's absolutely no time to reflect. There's no time to think, well, how did I get here? Because I was so busy running there, and as soon as I got there, I had to run somewhere else. You know, so there was absolutely no time for me to sit and think, how did I get here and what should I be doing with my life? I was just too goddamn busy. I mean, I was one of those drug addicts who didn't score like a whole lot of dope in the morning, not because it wouldn't have lasted till the end of the day, which is probably true anyway, but because it didn't keep me busy enough. I was somebody who had to score 4 or 5 times a day to keep me busy, so that I didn't notice that my life was just disappearing, so that I didn't notice that I was heartbroken, so I didn't notice that I wasn't doing anything, so I didn't notice any of that kind of stuff. So busyness became this awful habit that I must say I've taken into recovery and thwarted myself there too. I got clean when I was about 31, and it seemed very old then, and now I know that it's not so old, but I had been running for many, many years and avoiding life for a long time, and I felt like I was almost dying. And I got really busy with the steps, and I got really busy with service. And I'm not saying any of that stuff's bad, because I didn't know how else to run my life. You know, I just really needed to be busy 24/7, 24/7, 24/7. Listening to the guy who shared at the last meeting. I mean, as soon as I came to NA, I knew that this was a really good thing. I knew that it was a really good thing. But what happened, it also not only gave me an opportunity to be clean, but gave me an opportunity to be just as busy as I'd always been. I mean, of course I'd do 2 meetings a day. God, I'd do 3 meetings a day. I mean, I scored because it just kept me busy, kept me really busy. I mean, I started my 4th step when I was 6 weeks clean. You know, and it kept me busy. I don't know, I wrote for 4.5 months. You know, my sponsor and I, it took something like 3 weeks to get through it. I mean, it was just this obsessive, you know. If I had a moment to spare, oh, I should be writing on my 4th step. You know, really. And I mean, but it was just the way it had to be for me. I mean, if I'd stopped still, really, if I had real insight into the tragedy of my life then, maybe I would have been overwhelmed and maybe gone out to use, because my life was tragic. I mean, I had been a person with extraordinary potential who just almost destroyed it, absolutely almost destroyed it, almost destroyed my parents, I almost destroyed my adopted son, you know, I destroyed anything I'd touched, really. But one of the things about NA, and this is one of the little clever things about this fellowship, it just kept me really, really busy. And it took me years before I realised that. You know, and I did get incredibly busy, and I really got into service, and that was important for me. You know, one of the reasons why I did it was I couldn't bear to owe anyone anything, you know, because I was always frightened you might come and collect one day when I was least expecting it. And I knew that NA was sort of free, but I didn't really believe it. And so on one hand, well, I sort of took in it that way, and then I gave back really, really quickly as well. And that, I mean, you know, that's great. I mean, it was great for me. You know, it gave me purpose. I was an older, cleaner member in an emerging community. You know, I needed to grow up really fast. You know, all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if I would have stayed clear had it been any other way, but it was just as busy as life had always been. Just as busy as life had always been. Running here, running there, taking responsibility for that. You know, I know we each have different kind of self-destructive patterns. And I know people who come into the fellowship who've never taken responsibility for damn thing in their whole lives. You know, but that wasn't me. I came into recovery taking responsibility for everything. Absolutely everything. You know, I would look after you. I mean, as I said, I have an adopted son. I mean, who else but a complete fucking lunatic at 25 or 26 years old would adopt a really lovely but very damaged child? I was still using, you know, because it was just, I couldn't bear to see people unhappy. I couldn't bear to see people get lost. I wanted to help out and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I was one of those people who got clean and became incredibly responsible. Incredibly responsible. And as I said, that's what I needed to do. Because as I said, if I'd really stopped and looked at my life, I would have been really lost. Really, really lost. There was a couple of questions that I hated, but I loved them as well. And they were the questions that people would occasionally pose at meetings, and they were, you know, who are you and what do you really want to do with your life? You know, who am I and what do I really want to do with my life? And in a funny kind of way, and I hope this comes out right, in lots of ways I have used the steps of Narcotics Anonymous to avoid taking responsibility for my life for many years. You know, I was one of these people who saw a kind of an out in the third step. You know, and I just thought if I handed my life and will over to the care of God that I wouldn't have to make any decisions. I thought I would just do the next right thing, I'd go to the next meeting, I'd go to the next service meeting, I'd sponsor the next person and all that kind of thing. But it never occurred to me that I actually had a right to make some decisions in my own life. I handed it over completely to God and just left me out of the picture. And this is just, again, so typical of me. This is self-destructive. You know, I hand my life over to drugs and I come and I hand my life over to God. But I do it in such a way that I lose my own agency in that. I don't know if any of you guys sort of understand what I'm saying, but I'm one of those people who, remember I said, you know, we weren't allowed to cry in my family, that the worst thing to do is cry, we were called ungrateful. You know, I was one of those people who would have been grateful just to be clean. You know, and I think that's ripping myself off big time. You know, and times in early recovery where I thought maybe there's better things I could be doing. You know, maybe there could be other things that I could be doing other than, you know, going to meetings and doing lots of service and sponsoring far too many people and all this kind of stuff. Maybe I could be doing something that I really want. And I'd say, no, 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 this is a spiritual program and your needs are subservient to the fellowship. You know, and I thought, you know, we all have our own sort of self-destructive patterns, and mine is that I let my own dreams go in order to try and help other people. And the thing is that I can use this program to support that kind of self-destructive behaviour. You know, I did my steps, you know, I did my service and all that kind of stuff. And when it got to the first time I did the 10th, 11th and 12th step, I read the 10th step all wrong. You know, and the way that I read the 10th step was, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible. If we continue to take personal inventory over and 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 over. You know, and when I was wrong, promptly admitted it, but then, you know, went on and, you know, and it was sort of like there was no freedom in that. It was somehow this kind of thing that I was just going to be going around for the rest of my life apologising every time I did something wrong. But to make things even worse, when I got to the 11th step, because I'm not a natural meditator, you know, I mean, you heard me at the beginning. I mean, I can't concentrate for anything. You know, like my experience of a long meditation session is about 12 minutes. You know, that's about tops. Fortunately, in the basic text, it said for those who can't meditate, prayer is good. You know, I'm a great prayer. I'm a really fantastic prayer. But what I read after that, it's kind of so strange. praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And I thought that I was praying for God's, for knowledge of God's will for us, not me. I got caught up in the we of the program. You know, again, and I hope this doesn't sound kind of bad because I know the we of the program is really important, but I can get lost in the we of the program. And I don't think that that's what God wants. I think God wants me to find some kind of way to achieve the full potential that I never could as a child that broke my heart. And I believe that this program is actually a way for me to try and look at dealing with the things that kept me from that, using the steps up until step 10. And I think the 11th step is actually about praying for God's will for me and the power to carry that out, which is essentially the question. Who am I and what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And this has been really big for me lately. Some of you who know this, and I know there's Susan there, probably understands more than most. About 8 years ago, this question had come up for me again, and it comes up from time to time. What do I want to do with my life? What do I want to do for me? And, you know, it's hard for me. I was never taught to ask that question. I was always taught to ask, what's best for us? How can I do this for us, you know? And as I said, and then I used this program to carry on with that kind of stuff. And some of you know Sydney, and I was at Bondi Beach, and I was actually in the waves. And the sky was really big, and the sea was really big, and I'd been asking this question for a while, you know, just sending it out there, you know. But instead of saying, what do I want? I was asking, what do you want? You know, see, I think it says, ask conscious contact with God as we understand, praying only for knowledge of his will for me. You know, but I was asking his will for somebody else, I think, I don't know. And I do have a lot of skills. And I was working in a job that didn't allow me to exercise all those skills. And I got this, it was almost like a voice, and it said, run for the World Board of Narcotics Anonymous. And I just thought, isn't that interesting? You know, because I knew that I'd, you know, been in service, I'd been RSR, I think. And I knew that, you know, the election was coming up and that they were calling for nominees, and I just thought, well, you know, I'll do that. Because there was another thing, I thought, if I don't, I was leaning towards journalism. I've always wanted to write, you know, but never could because I couldn't stick at it. I'd started a lot of things but couldn't stick at it. And then this came up and I thought, oh well, you know, I'll run for the board and then if I get on the board that'll be great and if I don't get on the board then I'll do journalism. And even though it was a great idea, and another way, it was a way of not taking responsibility. I didn't ask myself, what would you prefer to do? Anyway, so what happened, you know, I nominated and I got on. 6 years, you know. And you know, it was a really interesting thing. I mean, it was just wonderful. I mean, you know, what an extraordinary experience. But it just meant for the next 6 years, I didn't have to ask what I wanted. You know, not once. You know, you need me over at a sponsorship work group? Sure. I mean, I've only just come back from LA 2 weeks ago, and I feel like shit. Yep, I'll get back on that plane. You know, and I'm not saying that this is wrong. I mean, this is my path, and I will never, ever, 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 ever. Ever be sad that that was the decision, you know, because it really, in the end, it wasn't my decision. I mean, all these people voted, you know, someone they didn't even know, really. But what happened was, after those 6 years, I was completely lost again, you know, completely lost. You know, what do I do now? I was tired. I had this extraordinary experience of, you know, flying places and meeting people and being involved in service. But, you know, and I got back, and right when I should have been asking, what do I want to do? I was offered a place at university with this massive reduction in entry requirements. Now, I could have put it off for a year. Oh, but no. Straight off the board into university. You know, just completely insane, you know. Working full-time, you know, back, you know, hadn't been at school for 30 years. You know, just completely insane. And I'm only just coming out of this. And the reason, I mean, this for me is my 11th step, really. What do I want? And what does God want me to do? I had a big meltdown just on, when was it, Monday or Tuesday. So this is very recent for me. And I came over here, and I'm not on the World Board anymore, and I've got nothing to do with the convention. And even though Susan's laughing, my first experience was one of profound grief. I was just completely lost. I hadn't realised how much of me was reliant on being of service to you guys. I hadn't realised how important what I put in had become, again, self-destructive behaviours. I mean, this isn't a bad behaviour, but it's one that keeps me blocked. You know, and I was just in absolute meltdown. I just felt so grief-stricken, I can't tell you. And I knew that it wasn't about not being on the World Board. I knew it wasn't. I was talking with Lewis about it, and I was just needed to express it to someone. I felt really stupid. You know, I can't say to normal, you know, people who've never been on something like that, oh, you know, I'm not on the World Board now, and I feel kind of sad, you know, because people go, well, you bloody idiot. You know, 6 years, for God's sake, get on with it, girl. You know, but... So I knew it wasn't about that, but what it was an incredible grief that I now had to take responsibility for my life again. You know, I was going to be here at this convention. I wasn't going to be running around like a loony. I was actually going to be present, you know. And then the other thing was, and then, you know, normally I would have then been, oh, I volunteer. I lost my voice. I lost my voice, you know. But even before that, the night before I lost my voice, and I actually just obviously come back, you know, interesting what a lost voice means, you know, metaphysically. What happened was that I couldn't sleep the night after I'd had this incredible outpouring of grief. I just couldn't sleep, and I lay and I was sharing a room with two other people, and they were snoring away and staring into space and thinking, you know, what do I really want? What do I want? You know, what do I want? And I made some really, really big decisions a couple of days ago. Now, it's interesting, when I got clean in 86, I went to a meeting, and it was my third meeting, I think, and I went there stoned. And I said to the people at that meeting, I said, I'm going to stop using tomorrow. And I don't know what they thought. You know, I don't know what they thought. But to me, it was making a commitment in public. And I can say I've never used since. You know, and that was 19 years and a few months ago. And I think in a funny kind of way, I think that that's what I'm using this for today. I want to make a commitment to you guys that I'm not going to do this anymore. You know, that I am going to take some responsibility, that what I'm going to be praying for is not about what's good for all of us, because I know what's good for us, because I've got a very strong conscience, but what's actually good for me, not in a selfish kind of way, but to do, I think, what God always wanted me to do, which is to be really happy and really free, fulfilling my potential. You know, I made some really big decisions that night, a few nights ago. I haven't talked to anyone about it because I lost my voice. I went to a whole lot of things happened at once in the last couple of weeks. I went away on a weekend with two people I went to school with, high school, and they treat me like we were, you know, 16. And so they think of me as this fabulous author. I mean, that's how they see me, this poet and a painter. I mean, you guys, I mean, no one would know that. I don't paint anymore. I don't write anymore. I'm too busy. You know, another self-destructive behaviour. Too busy for me. Too busy to reflect, you know. And that really challenged me. You know, it really challenged me. I thought, you know, I can't do a 10th step, you know, properly. I mean, an 11th step properly. But these people are telling me, they're saying, isn't this God's will for you? Wasn't this always God's will for you? You know, that you would create and you would write? What happened? I mean, they didn't say what happened. I was thinking, what happened? I mean, I'm the one that gets in my way all the time. You know, I limit myself all the time. I don't think God wants me to do that. I don't think God wants any of us to do that. I think God wants us to be the best, the happiest, the most extraordinary people in the world. You know, and I'm the one who stops me from having that. Always have been. Always have been. Anyway, then, just a couple of weeks later, in the last couple of weeks, a friend of mine has this art exhibition on risk. And one of the images is this person suspended in midair, and I was really drawn to it. I really wanted it, and it cost a lot of money. But I made a decision on that night. I'm going to buy it, you know. And it's this person suspended in midair, leaping into nowhere, which is what happened to me in the early days when I got clean. I didn't know what it was going to like to be clean. I didn't know what it was going to be like to have a higher power. I didn't know what it was going to be like, any of this kind of stuff, but I just did it anyway because I knew that it was better than where I was. And this is where I am again. You know, I need to take another giant leap. You know, I need to do something different. You know, so I don't know whether I'm going to do any of this kind of stuff, but I'd really like to make a commitment to all of you guys, and you hold me to it. You know, you'll see me around. I'm not going anywhere. You know, I'll see you in San Antonio or whatever. You ask me. You ask me if I'm doing that creative writing course. You ask me whether I've deferred university. And you ask me whether I'm not going to do any work on weekends. You know, because that's what I want to do. I need to go out and play. I need to go out and play. And you know what? One of the things that's happened, I've gone back to university. I thought I was a genius. You know what I am? I'm a straight B student. You know? And that would have been enough to get me running out of university before. Maybe I'll just be a sort of an average also-ran writer. But God, I really need to try it out. You know, I really need to try. I remember years ago, Susan and I were at the very first World Board meeting, and we had to sit around and talk about our dreams. I didn't say, I want to be on work groups for the rest of my life. I said, I want to write a children's book. And I burst into tears. And every time I say that kind of stuff, I burst into tears. When I was using the two words that used to take me to tears all the time was the word freedom, because I didn't have any, and a home, because I didn't know what it was. I do know what freedom is, and I do know what home is, but at the moment the word that just cuts me up is the word dream. You know, and I believe that I'll just go back to the topic. What happened for me is that I believe that the first 10 steps are actually about freeing me from self-limiting behaviour. I believe that the 11th step is about me finding out who I am and what I really want to do with my life and asking for help to do that. And I believe that the 12th step is more than just going to meetings and holding my hand out to newcomers. You know, and I do all of that, but I actually think it's being an example of somebody maybe who is profoundly, profoundly meeting their own potential. You know, I don't know what better message there would become from that. You know, and so for me, it was interesting when Mike first asked me to share this meeting, he actually said cleaning house. Now it's, what is it called? The new house, or something? When I first got clean, I thought that that's what the steps were going to give me. I thought they were going to give me a nice, clean house. Do you know what I mean? I thought that I was going to be able to use the steps to kind of clean up my past so I didn't have to be ashamed anymore. I thought that I was going to be able to use the steps to be a really good girl, a really, really goodest girl in the world, you know, so that everyone would love me and that I could live with myself. And I thought, and people used to say this, they used to say, you get the 10th step and you just go, you know, 10, 11 and 12 and everything's kind of, you know, sort of like you're there somehow, you know. And I think, because I'm a very neat and tidy person, I like a bit of a clean house, I like a bit of a dust here or there and moving a few ornaments and that kind of stuff. And I thought, well, I'll organise my life and then I'll get right, you know, again, this sort of rubbish that I used to sort of think, I'll just get my house in order or whatever and then I'm just going to live there for the rest of my life. You know, and I don't see that anymore. I don't see the 11th step particularly as anything to do with a house. You know, I see it as more of a launching pad, you know, something much, much bigger than just kind of sorting things out and getting things right. But I can't do that until I have got things right. I can't do that, you know, until I have worked those previous steps. And just forgive me if I just go back a little bit and just talk about the steps and then maybe, you know, I'll shut up. What I found about the steps is that, you know, I am powerless, but not as powerless as I think. I had neglected the power that I get back in the 11th step. I thought that you just become powerless and you're powerless for the rest of your lives. you know, and I thought that was some kind of spiritual good thing to be. I didn't read the steps properly, but I thought, you know, I'm just going to be powerless over everything for the rest of my life, irresponsible. I just let God, I don't have to do anything else. I thought that a searching and fearless moral inventory, you know, I would just become, as I said, get all the crap out of my life and just become really obsessively, fabulously clean and ordered and organized and that kind of stuff. You know, I thought that that these sort of steps were really going to, as I said, make me good enough to be loved by God. But really what they've done is that they have given me the freedom of all that old sort of stuff, because what happened is I actually went through the steps. I learnt to do things. Remember I said I couldn't concentrate? You guys made me sit in two meetings a day for an hour and a half at a time, so 3 hours concentrating for years and years and years and years and years. I can concentrate now. I can absolutely concentrate now. And when I got clean, you could still smoke in meetings, so you didn't have to go out and have a cigarette either, so you didn't have to break any of that kind of stuff. You know, remember I said I had no endurance at all? I couldn't do anything unless it was really kind of easy? What happened is that I've hung around here for 19 years doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over. And I've learnt patience, and I've learnt endurance, and I can do things that I don't want to do. You know, I remember I couldn't believe it. We'd get all this stuff by email from the board, you know, from the office, just sort of pages and pages of stuff, and they'd say, look, can you just review this and get it back to us within 48 hours? And I'd look at it and I'd go, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And I'd click on my computer. I'd sit there and I'd go, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And I'd download the pages. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And I'd go through it and check and check. And I've learnt to do things that I don't want to do over and over and over and over and over and over and over. I'm not frightened of my sadness anymore, the sadness that used to cripple me, that used to either become rage or using. I've become incredibly sad in recovery. When I realised the devastation of my life around five years clean, I think that was about it, I just cried for a couple of years. You know, I cried. I didn't think that there was anything I should try and cure. I was in a young fellowship and I remember I was crying at a meeting once just about, you know, my losses and stuff, and this really nice newcomer came up to me and she said, maybe you should do another fourth step. And fortunately I was well enough to know that I don't want to inventory away any of my feelings. If I'm really sad, it's for a reason. You know, I have a lot to be sad about, you know. And my anger, just as soon as I started letting myself cry, my anger just dissipated. Absolutely dissipated. So my feelings don't get in the way of things anymore. Because I lead a very principled life, an incredibly principled life, the principles that I got from Narcotics Anonymous, openness, honesty, willingness, you know, all that kind of stuff, being of service, which, by the way, are my parents' principles that I grew up with, you know, so it was very easy to kind of recognise and put them back in my life. And I don't live with a guilty conscience. I don't have to lie awake at night rationalising bullshit behaviour. You know, I don't have to do any of that kind of stuff. If I've done the wrong thing, if I feel like someone has kicked me in the guts, I can't stand it. I'll ring you up and I'll say, look, I'm really sorry about that. You know, and I'll get that over and done with. So in lots of ways, I'm a clear slate now. You know, if I'm doing crappy stuff, it's because part of me wants to do it. And the last thing, and I mean, I know my friend Barb is this too, you know, it's suck you into it, is busyness. You know, the insane irresponsibility of busyness. I no longer want to lead an irresponsible life. You know, that kind of, it seemed like a good idea at the time. Or I was too busy at that stage. That kind of stuff, I just don't want to do that anymore. So the last of my self-destructive behaviour that has to go is busyness. And I think that I'm doing something about that. I think I am. And just maybe if I'm not so busy, I might learn to meditate for 13 minutes. Or maybe 14 minutes, or something like that. But look, I don't know if I've made a lot of sense to people. As I said, it's the first time I've spoken in a number of days, and it's just kind of all come out. But I think it was really important for me to have a meltdown at this convention. I think it was really important for me not to be able to serve. I think it was really important for me not to have a voice. I think it was really important for me not to have anyone who could really talk with me. As I said, I would, you know, as soon as I told people I couldn't talk, most of them would run a mile. Oh, Aaron Deeper didn't. She talked. But it's kind of interesting. People just didn't know what to do with me, and I didn't know what to do with them. I didn't know what to do. So people would come up and give me a hug, and then they'd go away. And they would, I think there's a kind of peace in that. I think it's not a bad thing. If you see me going around, some of it might be true, you know. But, yeah, and I think I'm about done. I could go on and on and on and on and on. But look, I just want to thank all of you for being here and listening to me tonight. I really, really appreciate it. I certainly don't feel alone tonight. Really like to thank my wonderful husband for being so sweet and supporting me all the way through this, through being on the board and being off the board and all that kind of stuff. And I know that he'll support me through this next phase of my life. And I would really like your help to stay on track. So when you see me at San Antonio, you remind me about this share, because I, you know, one thing that really works on me is shame and guilt, and use it to your best advantage. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Bella. About 10 minutes before this workshop was scheduled to begin, I got asked to fill in, and I thought, well, great. You know, I get an opportunity to practice a 12-step and be of service. And then I realized, you know, also, I get an opportunity to hear somebody talk about the 10th, 11th, and 12th step, and I got a lot out of it. Thank you very much. Let's thank Bella again, please. Okay, I guess we'll, you know, make a circle and close in the usual way with the third step prayer.